Cashing in on content marketing. I'm Amanda Milligan, the marketing director at Fractal. And every week on the show, I interview marketing experts about the ways to know the value of your work and get buy-in for your strategies. This week, we're exploring the concept of humantic content and how it's the perfect bridge between serving the search engines and the users. I'm thrilled to have Grant Simmons, the VP of Performance Marketing at Homes.com, part of the CoStar Group, on the show to talk about this fascinating topic. Welcome to the show, Grant.
Why, thank you. That was quite an intro there. Yeah. Let's cash in on content. Let's go.
Well, I just saw you present on this at DMO Advanced. And this is kind of a generally debated topic of how much should you go for search engines as opposed to the users. And I really like the way you framed this. So what was the impetus for you to actually create this framework before we even dive into what it is?
Sure. Well, to be honest, I've been using something very similar for a while. I like to have different themes for each of my talks when I present. So I came up, as you remember, with a Terminator type theme, which is always popular. Carl is the name of the most human of the robots, the T-1000. So, or T-800, excuse me. So what I decided to do was take C-A-R-L and build the framework around that. But it really comes down to how do we leverage what's out there as far as AI / machine learning tools. How do we add that human in the loop, as you said, and really come out with content that both search engines and users love? Mm-hmm. And to be honest, most search engine experts are trying to game it. My thing is we're trying to create great content for humans, but if it doesn't rank, no one's going to find it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's a balance. It's a balance that a lot of people are debating. So, again, to kind of start with foundational stuff, like how is machine learning affecting search? Like, what is Google doing right now that people are trying to game, like you're saying?
Sure. Well, look, there's a very smart guy called Carl Roof who basically said an algorithm is just an algorithm, which means it can be fooled somewhat. And he proved it by ranking number one for a local query, just complete lorem ipsum. And it was just based on the framework of the page, the words used in the page. Now it's not completely lorem ipsum, so it uses certain words, but it didn't make sense to anyone. So the idea that Google could really truly understand content to the ultimate meaning of every single word is kind of a fallacy. They cannot. They're getting really good though. And there's new kind of machine learning, models that are quite smart and can understand the concepts behind content. But I think the key thing there is, search engines are just machines that are trying to understand content better. Now, they start by understanding the query. They break that down, expand it out. They try and understand exactly what the intent of the user might be. And then they match it against an index of different web pages that they have in their index to see which one matches best. And it's not a simple match, obviously, but they have to understand what the query is, the intent is, and then they have to match it to what they've broken down from a content standpoint. Now, that breaking down of the content standpoint is really what we want to understand, is what do we write that can be easily broken down by search engines to give an idea of what the topic of the page and the expertise of the page might be. That's kind of in a nutshell.
Yeah, and that feeds into this whole discussion that's always happening about keywords. And
that's right.
And you talked a little bit about this and the relationship between that and maybe entities instead. So what is your take on it?
Well, 2013, I wrote this article in Search Engine Journal that was a Search Engine Watch, excuse me, that was Keywords Are Dead, not Within 10. And everyone said, wow, that's so forward thinking and keywords will never go away and blah, blah, blah. And my whole thing was, it was always about topics, all right? And topics generally was, what is the really that one page deserve to rank for? What is it that it's an expert on, everything else? So when we talk about entities in place of keywords, we're really talking about concepts, people, places, things. Concepts could be dates, concept could be events, but something that's unique and distinguishable and can be defined well. And let's just use that word well. well cannot be defined without knowing whether it is there's water at the bottom, or it's some kind of English statement, or it's a well, you know, by an inflection or an intonation. So we've got to make sure that we can disambiguate. Is that an actual word? I think it is. Disambiguate the different words within our copy so that Google really understands from that contextual standpoint what the content is about.
So that's where, exactly, that was my question. So that's where entities play in.
Entities play in because it starts to form some kind of topical cloud that search engine can understand what that particular content is about. And then by extension, the site itself. So a silly example, if you're reading a website or a page about the Beatles, if they don't mention Paul, that's probably not a great website. So think about from that standpoint, when you're writing, you know, your content, what is not included that should be included to give additional context within the copy?
So would you say that the approach is when you have an idea, write the piece and then optimize it based on additional research that you're doing? Or do you do that initial research, like semantic research up front and then build it around?
That's such a loaded question.
I know
SEOs hate to say it depends. But I generally do the research first and then use that to guide the writing. And then I do a run by afterwards. There are some great tools like Serve for SEO where you can basically put in a keyword or a page. It will bring back via NLP, natural language processing, entity either from Google or from their own database. And they're really trying to, you know, give you cues about how many times a word should appear in content and what entities should appear in content. To be honest, when I say that to people, they say, well, that's keyword stuffing. Well, the thing is, there's a very fine line, as you said, between keyword stuffing and keyword inclusion. Like I said, if Paul isn't mentioned on our Beatles site, maybe he should be mentioned 5 times because he's the most important guy. Thank you, Paul. Yeah, big Beatles fan. But I mean, that's the thing. You've got to think about what's the most important elements of a particular concept or topic, and then make sure the entities that are connected to that are included in the copy or included in associated pages throughout the site. So context is king, not content.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is kind of like a philosophical thinking about it, but is it keyword stuffing if it seems natural? Like if you're reading it and you wouldn't notice it, is it keyword stuffing?
Is the Terminator a machine if he thinks he's a person? You know, am I because I am? I mean,
right.
I think the thing is, keyword inclusion seems to state that it shouldn't be missing. And then keyword density is this term everyone hates because it doesn't mean anything in itself.
Mm.
Keyword contextual inclusion means how important is that word? And really that word, that topic, that entity, that's really where we start to play around with where should exist within that content. Should exist within a header, should exist within the proximity of a header. What other words, phrases should be in the proximity of that entity to give it context? What other links should be to that page to give additional context? So nothing happens in a vacuum, and it is philosophical as far as what is really keyword stuffing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really, I do try and say keyword inclusion means you try and find what's missing.
Yeah.
And then keyword conceptual relevance is about how important that should be and where it should be placed and how many times it should be placed on a page in an ideal document that would make it really easy to understand for search engines.
And yeah, there are different intentions.
Yeah. I speak a lot. Can you tell? I like to explain myself to myself.
No, this is fascinating though. That's why I really liked how you put it, because I see this topic come up all the time and there's just always so much heated debate around it.
There is. Well, keyword density was one of those things that, you know, that was the best word for it back in the day when we were trying to make sure that a keyword appeared on a page enough and variations appear on the page enough to make it seem like that page was about it. Yeah, you don't say Grant was walking down the Grant Road with Grant to get to Grant, find Grant. I mean, that stuff doesn't work. Obviously, it's not great for the user. And we have to take consideration that the user is the king in Google's eyes. And so they have lots of signals to understand if content is relevant to a user. So we've got to think about that as well.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the context of having those words where they are on the page, what other words they're next to, and you also briefly mentioned links as well. Can you talk a little bit more about how that plays in and any other factors besides just those like entity words? Yeah,
so in that framework that I kind of built out for this particular thing, there was the idea of relationships. And the idea of relationships is how are things related within the site, not just related in the page, so that's also important. It's what are the relations? So you probably have heard about or talk about, you know, topic clusters, where a topic cluster, you know, you have a central theme and then you have supporting topics around it. I mean, really, that's kind of what we're talking about from an entity standpoint, is what is the connection to give more context with the pages that link into a major page. So we might have a page about the Beatles and then we'll have separate pages about Paul John, you know, and everything else. If one forgets Ringo, he doesn't get a page. But I mean, the idea is that maybe there's the topical hub around the Beatles and everything else falls off it, and then songs would link into the various folks that wrote it. So you really create this contextual hub that really reinforces what those pages were about. So internal linking is so key to all that. External linking is also important. I mean, obviously anchor text, everyone knows anchor text is important, not stuffing anchor text, not reinforcing lots of the same kind of anchor text, but having anchor text that is relevant to the page you're targeting, relevant to the topic, is obviously important. I've been in the agency business for a long time. I've been in-house for 7 years, agency for over 20 years, and never pushed the idea of telling someone what the anchor text should be. It should be natural. But if you can influence in any way, shape, or form, you try and do that. So if you push out an article, you try and make sure the anchor text in it is relevant to the user, relevant to the target page, and relevant to the target topic.
We had this discussion a lot, because in what we do digital PR, we have no control over it, right? Like, we're pitching data to the writers and we have to tell people, we're not going to tell them how to link to us. We're lucky to get it, you know, like we're trying to earn that. So that's really helpful. So like the links, I actually wanted to ask you, how do you make the decision to break some of these subtopics out into their own pages rather than having a more comprehensive original page?
Sure. So there are some things that deserve their own page. And so that's something where there is enough content that makes sense around the page without repetitiveness, without trying to pull in stuff that's not relevant to the actual subject. And there's some that might deserve to be on their own page, but, you know, an own page for multiple topics that are broken up by section headers that might make more sense from either a readership standpoint, or there's just not enough content to really fluff it out. That was something we used to talk about here, which is that there is meaningful content and there is fluff. And fluff is sometimes what a lot of people write just to try and get keywords within a page. You know, actual really relevant content is, there's no length of what it should be. There's just, you know, enough to satisfy the searcher's query. So the way I look at it generally is, can I answer one question really well within a single page? Or is it better to have multiple answers within a page? We're not talking about physical questions and answers. We're talking about satisfaction or intent within a single page that makes sense, something that leads a user through. So I'm trying to give a great example of this, but often or not, there's some financial type things in buying a house. So I work for homes.com. We talk about buying a house. Well, some things might be fairly simple about, you're going through a walkthrough. What are the 10 things that you should look at when you're going through a walkthrough? Now, that might be completely different from if you're doing it remotely. Remotely, there might be a lot more information you want to put in, some images you want to put in that might require a separate page to talk about, are you remotely over Zoom? Are you doing it on your phone? Or are you doing it where you can't hear someone? It's just a video you're looking at. Different things that might require different topics because the intent is different. The question might be different. I'm looking at this on my iPhone. How do I see a remote house tour? Or it could be, I'm having a remote house tour with my agent. What's the best questions to ask? So those are two separate topics I would say require different pages. But yeah, I hope that makes kind of sense. The thing is, a page should only answer the search query that it's made for, ideally, unless it's a topic that requires multiple queries. And the other thing to think about as well is today, because Google breaks down a page into sections, because they have passage ranking where a specific answer might be pulled out of a page to show on a search result, it doesn't matter much about breaking it into a million pages. I would say it matters from a topical cluster standpoint, but not as much from an individual topic that might be just a subtopic of something else. Sometimes I just include those on a page to have a more robust page. It depends.
I mean, that's always the right answer. It's because there was that phase where everyone wanted to do comprehensive posts and it was, oh, you need to be like really thorough. But what you're saying is it's about the intent. And if you think it's more likely, your example's great because it's, if you want to do a tour and you know you're remote, like how to do a tour remotely, they're probably not going to want to land on a page that talks about in-person tours at the bottom. There's like a tiny paragraph. It's like, oh, by the way, if this was your, you know, what you're looking for, it's not exactly the most robust answer. So if people have content already on their site, how can they go about using analytics to see how things are working and what they should potentially tweak?
Sure. Well, I use a tool, SEMrush. I can see what a particular page ranks for. You can obviously use Google Search Console. You can see what a page ranks for. I just start off when I look at the page. I look at what it's ranking for, and I say, am I actually answering those questions that those queries Google thinks are relevant to the page? I was working with a client that had, I know nothing about furniture, okay? I just know about this client. So a mid-century modern chair, all right? You can write a lot about a mid-century modern chair, believe it or not. But if it's just ranking for chair or it's ranking for modern chair, that probably isn't the right answer for that query. And if it's searching for someone that's looking for buy, you know, a mid-century modern chair, it might not be great either if it's just an informational article. So in those cases, I try and look at what deserves to be broken out. If it's a modern chair, do I have a page for a modern chair? And if I do, why isn't it ranking for the modern chair? Why is this mid-century modern chair outranking it? So look at that kind of, we say keyword cannibalization, but topic cannibalization. And I say, is that an actual entity? Does it exist? If it exists, should I create a page for it? Because it's going to be a much better experience. And sometimes I'll say, you know what? I just have to improve this page. The mid-century modern chair, maybe modern chair is just an offshoot of that. It's just not as mid-century. I don't know. Like I said, don't know anything about furniture. But that's the thing. You've got to think about the best user experience and are you actually answering the query that you end up getting from Google, because Google does not understand it 100%. And that disconnect could be based on internal linking. It could be based on the content on the page. It could be based on links to the page from elsewhere. It could be based on the hierarchy of the site. I think that the key thing there is to really think about that when you're planning out the site. I gave that example of the Terminator, you know? Yeah, you can go through the different movies of the Terminator, but then anytime you do an offshoot to the actor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, yeah, he's really tied into the Terminator, but he's not connected in any other way to the movie. So he can have his own family page for the Schwarzenegger family. That shouldn't be connected to anything to do with the Terminator, except by him. Mm-hmm. That's a small connection. You shouldn't be linking to every page. You should understand which page deserves the link to create that topic cluster and to reinforce what that entity is really about, what that page topic is about.
That makes total sense. Is that your primary way then of identifying the entities? Like you said, you're getting a sense of what Google is identifying are the entities of your page. Are there any other tricks to that of trying to get a sense of what's possible?
Yeah, so Google has the natural language processing API. And so you can go there and you can paste in your page and it'll tell you what entities are in there. That, to be honest, Wikipedia is a great source. So generally, if something appears in Wikipedia, is generally recognized an entity. Google leverages that database as well as other databases that they've purchased or they're looking at. You know, they might look at LinkedIn as a database for, you know, users and some kind of authority. So I think to recognize people and to recognize, you know, distinct entities, they're going to use multiple databases to really hone in on what is, as we said before, unique, you know, what is differentiated, what can be disambiguate. So disambiguated, yes. So things that avoid confusion. So Wikipedia, great source. Google pulls out entities in NLP API, and they identify entities. They give links to Wikipedia articles. There's a great tool called Inlinks, found at inlinks.net. Dixon Jones was a guy that did Majestic SEO, smart guy, been around a long time. And he created that really to pull out entities from documents and from the top 10 ranking documents within a Google search result, and then analyze that to see what are the entities that exist with all those pages. Surfer does the same thing, Surfer SEO. There's some other tools as well that you can use, but at the end of the day, it's going to be up to the individual, but you have to do that research first. And from my perspective, Google is kind of the guy you're trying to, not game, but you're trying to help them understand. And so, you know, horse's mouth is always good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because I guess we all operate under the assumption that they're going to continue improving to try to meet user intent. It's just how...
Yeah. Everything they do, I mean, they've got the recent algo updates or the new machine learning models. You know, you had BERT, and now you got MUM that strings together things like a guide, so it's more intelligent in understanding how past user behavior is likely to reflect future user behavior. There's one other tool I wanted to mention, actually, is like TextRaiser. TextRaiser is really cool. There's a free version of it. It pulls out a lot of associated information, often inspires your writers, can inspire your content once you've written it to see what might be missing. But once again, I think that's the key. If you do good research up front, you plan out your topic clusters, your entity clusters up front, then you look at how you can build out the content and what should be in the content. So our Beatles page would have a link to the Paul page, you know, and that would be the anchor text, Paul McCartney or Paul McCartney bio, Paul McCartney songs, whatever that might be, would link out to the relevant pages. And once you've got that cluster and everything else, you can then fit it into an overall site, because there's going to be multiple topic clusters within a site, and that helps you define what the site navigation might be as well.
Yeah. Do you think internal linking is kind of like the biggest opportunity? I keep hearing that come up, that not enough people focus on that.
I think it's the biggest thing that can make a difference, to be honest, in most sites. Internal linking can make a massive difference. And remember, you're trying to get equity that comes into a site distributed fairly to the pages you want to have more importance, whether that's clicks from the homepage or deep links into them, whatever it might be. Internal linking can distribute or redistribute that equity within the site, shows Google and users what's most important. You know, having on a site about the Beatles, let's just say four pictures of the Beatles on the homepage with the text link through to their pages, that's much easier for users than anything else. Having a navigation of discography, you know, movies, things like that, it's most obvious, but it shortcuts the path to satisfaction. And that's what Google's trying to do in sending it to a deeper page. So internal linking can really help. Not every page should have the same number of internal links. It's the biggest issue I see. I was looking at a gift site recently for a client, and I saw there's 260 pages, 260 links to half their pages. And I'm going, they really have 260 links, 760 pages that are really important. 130 of those are the most important? I don't think so. They just did a very flat structure where every category was linked from the top navigation. You know, horrendous mega menus, but that's what some people think is really important. It's not. What's important is pages in your site have different value to users, to search engines, and internal linking can help structure that in a way that makes sense. So very succinct, yes.
Yeah, that's an excellent explanation. I appreciate you going into detail about it. Is there anything I forgot, Grant? Anything I should have asked that's important for content folks to know that they're overlooking? Anything?
I think that the key thing is research is so important. The research around the questions that people are really asking. Now, questions, everyone thinks, you know, who, what, where, why, how, whatever. Google is smart enough to know that questions are inferred. So if I put in, you know, sailboat, I'm probably looking to buy a sailboat. if I put in Atlanta, Georgia homes, I don't just want pictures. I probably want to buy them. So I think the key thing there is to understand that, that keywords themselves don't give actual meaning. Google understands meaning much more than just an individual keyword. Queries is how I talk about what gets typed into a search box. Google is constantly trying to improve how they understand that query. And we, as content people, have to make sure we satisfy that query 100% and better than anyone else out there. So that's really the key. And most people don't think they have to answer a query well. They just think they have to answer a question, not the same thing.
Yeah. So how long do you, when you incorporate changes like this, or your clients do, or anybody, how long does, do you think it takes to start seeing an uptick? And I ask this from the perspective of people getting buy-in for taking the time to do this type of thing. Like, sure.
Well, to build a topic cluster can take, you know, some folks a week and some folks 6 months. I remember working for a large big box store. You know, we did an analysis on his site and a year later, nothing was done. So some things move fairly slowly. But if you're able to get the content in place, you're able to research, author, publish, get your internal linking right, do some external promotion to make sure that that content is recognized. You know, 3 months is not unrealistic. To really get it stuck in a top position is normally 6 to 9 months, depends on the competitiveness of the niche and depends on how much you're investing in ongoing content. Because you know, most people, I just did 12 pages, yay, great. Unless they leave it, nothing happens. I'll tell you one funny story. I don't know how much time we got. Napster was one of my clients, you know, the music sharing.
Yeah.
And so you know, Apple Music, Apple iTunes, launched this online catalog of music genres. And I thought it was great, but it was really crappy. I said to Napster, they've just launched this. You should do it and you should do it better. Now, this, you can imagine, is 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And so they go, it's too much work. All right. So I went home, I scraped the Apple iTunes database, put it on a site and left it for a couple of years. And now I rank number one or number two for music genre or list of music genres, just from content that was crap. That's a technical term. That I improved over time. But all it is a list of music genres. And I built out a few pages underneath it. And every now and then I add in a user suggestion to keep it fresh. But that's been forever now.
Wow.
You know, so answer the query. If someone says music genre list, they want a list of music genres.
Mm-hmm.
If someone says, you know, homes, Atlanta, they want to buy a home. If someone says, you know, Beatles albums, they want a list of the albums from the Beatles and maybe have snippets of songs they can listen to and album covers. You've got to think about how you can satisfy the query totally, 100% better than anyone else.
I think that's a perfect way to wrap this up. Knowing the objective of our show though, Grant, who would you recommend to be guests on future episodes?
Wow. If you can get, I don't know. There's a lot of people out there. Is this still being recorded? Am I going to be pissed if I don't mention someone?
Oh no, we can get it out. That's fine. You can also, we can chat after. I know I always put people on the spot with this question.
That's okay. Well, look, I've mentioned Dixon Jones.
Yeah.
Great guy. Very smart, knows his stuff. Definitely InLinks is a great tool for discovering how to build out these topical elements. So he's a good guy to mention.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your insights with us. I appreciate it so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, everyone. Ta-da.
If you've listened to this and want even more tips, sign up for our podcast newsletter by going to the podcast page on the Fractal website. And if you've learned anything from this show, we'd love it if you'd subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review. Finally, if you have feedback, suggestions, ideas, thought on how I can get myself to go to sleep at a normal hour every night, or anything you'd like to share with me, shoot me an email at amanda@frac.tl. I'm a shameless extrovert who would love to hear from you. Thank you to Sean Kelly for podcast music and editing, and to Joao Pereira for logo design. And thank you, dear listener. I hope you'll join us next time.